Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. Issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
It's a clear belief that Jesus came and died and rose again, and that Scripture is revelation from God. And all those doctrines have been steadily eroded within the Episcopal Church.
This is one of the holiest and most moving moments of this entire General Convention for me.
Can priests, pastors, rabbis be sure that their preaching will not be prosecuted?
The First Amendment's right to organize, to preach against, to speak against any way of life or any person is left intact with this legislation.
Well, when the Pope writes a letter to his church and hoping that the rest of the world is going to be reading that letter over the church's shoulder, they weigh their words very carefully. If you've ever read a papal encyclical, a papal letter, a document that is, if not from the Pope's own hand, certainly reflective of the Pope's ideas, you will see that they often deal with very weighty issues, often moral issues, and they speak both to church and to world. And when it comes to matters of, we call it the economy, or the economies of the world, we usually think about money, finances, markets, banks, things like that, business. Scripture has things to say. And there are considerations greater than just kind of the pragmatics of how do we get out of the downward slide? Are we in a depression or a recession? What role do banks play? What role does government play? There are even more basic considerations than that that Christians and non-Christians really ought to consider. And that kind of forms the subject of the latest papal encyclical, Caritas in Veritate, Love in Truth, if you will. We're going to be talking about that with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse here in the first few minutes of this hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. We'll begin with this conversation about Pope Benedict's latest encyclical, and then Dr. Gary Habermas will answer the question, did the resurrection, namely the resurrection of Jesus Christ, really happen? It's Tuesday afternoon, the 21st of July. Our call-in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, and our in-studio email address for your questions and comments as well, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular here on the program, founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
As an economist, what do you think about Pope Benedict's encyclical Truth and Charity?
Well, I was actually, I'm kind of an odd economist, you might say, Todd, because I haven't been publishing in economics journals for probably 10 years. And so I read this kind of with two eyes. One eye was, oh, okay, what is he saying about economics? But the larger question is, what is he having to say about faith and morals and the sort of social context within which the economy is situated? And so I was delighted by it. And in fact, I read, there were a couple places where I read it and said, gee, I seems like I said something like that once, you know. And so I am delighted, as always, by the clarity of Benedict's thought and by the forcefulness with which he makes his point. So I like it a lot, and I was kind of puzzled by some of the commentary that I read about it, where people were saying, is he a socialist? Is he a capitalist? Is he a neocon? You know, none of those labels really work.
And then as a social critic, your reaction to it?
Well, you know, that's where I think Benedict really shines, you know. He's not an economist. He's not trying to be an economist. I think he is a very astute social critic, and I think the most serious social critic, not only of American society, but of the modern world and modern thought, the modern mind. He is the great critic of the modern mind, and so I feel like he nailed it right on the head, because what he's saying is the economy will give us what we want, but we have to give some attention to the question of what we want and whether what we want is good for us. And so what he's saying is that what is good for man has to be grounded and rooted in the truth about man and the truth about what is, in fact, good for us. And so to just say, well, we're getting whatever we want, that's not really good enough. I mean, as an economist, that's the kind of thing you say. Well, the market's all driven by consumers. Whatever the consumer wants, the market will satisfy. And Benedict's saying, yeah, that's true, but we need to look beyond that and say, well, what should we want? And are we wanting things that are, in fact, good for us, or are we wanting things that are going to be really destructive for us? And so I think when you see it that way, he has nailed it right on the head.
He talks about the common good, which is a term that can be thrown out as kind of a placeholder for whatever you want. What is there an objective meaning to this common good, at least from the Christian perspective?
Well, you know, the common good is a very old term. That comes from medieval thought, really. And it got pushed away by people like Rousseau, who start talking about the general will, which is something entirely different from the common good. And it got pushed away by the term social justice, which is something yet again quite different. Social justice is what most people think about now, is the term that comes to mind under this rubric. And social justice basically means is the distribution of income the way we think it ought to be? Is it just? Who gets what part of the pie and stuff like that? It has sort of deteriorated into nothing but a question about the distribution of resources. That's what people usually think about when they think social justice. And the general will, you know, honestly, God alone knows what Rousseau meant by that, because I don't know anybody who can really operationalize the concept of the general will, except that whatever the government says is good enough because the government represents the will of the people. You know, I find that completely nonsensical, impossible to understand. But the term common good is a much older term and refers to what are the goods that every person has in common? So it's not particularly talking about the distribution of income. It's talking about the sort of overarching framework within which people operate, make their choices, make their decisions, things like that. So, you know, you could think about it as a public good in an economic sense, but it doesn't quite do it justice. What is it that we all have in common? What is it that is good for each and every person? If we know that there are certain things that everybody needs that matter to everybody, then those are the things that if we pursue them, then we're going to produce something that is the common good, the good for all. And it doesn't have to do with the distribution of income. It fundamentally doesn't have to do with that. It has to do with, for example, a just system of law. That is something that serves everyone, a just system of law, a just and humane law around marriage and matrimony, for example. That pursues the common good because everybody has a stake in that. And that's the way the medievals thought about it, which is really quite different from anything modern people are doing. And so it's a mistake to read that term and read back into it social justice or something like that. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about something that's a much broader concept of what is good for the human person.
He says morally responsible openness to life represents a rich social and economic resource. I don't think that any pope, any modern pope, can speak to the moral state, be it the economy or whatever it is, without talking about human dignity and intrinsic value to human life. Does the Pope, is he really talking about the value of life here, as we would think of it in pro-life terms?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. That this I can't remember another document, a papal document in what is called Catholic social teaching, that is explicitly pro-life the way this is. You know, in other words, in past times when popes have talked about the economy, they talked about the economy, you know, and when they talked about pro-life or Humana Vitae or those kind of things, those were separate documents. But what Benedict is doing here is saying the economy itself depends in a fundamental way on the preservation of the dignity of the human person. And the dignity of the human person begins at conception and goes all the way to natural death. And if you don't have that as a basic fact built into your economy, you're not going to be pursuing the common good because some people are going to be vulnerable to the whims and power of other people. So he's exactly saying that the pro-life issue is, in a sense, an economic issue. So that part of it, that I think it's wonderful that he did that because it makes it harder to take this document and say, oh, it's a right-wing document, oh, it's a left-wing document. He's saying that the economic values of dignity for all and sharing resources and all of those kinds of things that one associates with Christian aspects of the economy, that you can't just put that over on one side and have the pro-life stuff over on another side. They're absolutely integrated with one another, and it's a mistake to try to separate it out. I think it's brilliant what he did here because he doesn't think like this, so I hope your listeners will not take this the wrong way.
About 20 seconds here.
He's got the Obama Catholics in a bind here, you see. The Obama Catholics don't know what to do with this document. And not that Benedict thinks like that, but that's a fact. I think that's a result of this thing.
Folks, you'll find a link to Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse and the Ruth Institute under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. Her book, Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jen, look forward to our next conversation. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back from this break, we're going to answer the question, did the resurrection of Jesus Christ really happen? And how would you debate someone who says it didn't? Paul says it's the one event that, if it did not occur, falsifies all of the Christian faith. Is a failure to believe in the resurrection also a belief that is falsifiable? One of the questions we'll take up with Dr. Gary Habermas on the other side of this break. Well, he says, without God, man neither knows which way to go nor even understands who he is. That's true in the economy, and it matters even higher than the economy. I'm Todd Wilkham. We'll be right back.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
The leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. Stay informed. Read the new broadcast transcripts on this subject. You'll find them at the top of the on-demand page at issuesetc.org. These transcripts are a must-read for every layperson and pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Issuesetc.org. Click on demand.
Giggle Free Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
From Japan to Oslo, Norway, here is Simon. Simon, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to vote for Benny Hinn. My reason for doing so is because, Jesus, the second Adam, ascended to heaven, so I guess there's some truth to it.
Thank you very much. Apparently they have senses of humor in Norway. Thank you very much for listening in Norway.
Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world. Issues Etc.
Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. www.facebook.com.